This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Luc-Olivier Dumeblay.
And I'm Yannick Mignon.
And what's our subject this week, Yannick?
Being yourself on social networks.
Ooh, that's why you mentioned to me today that it was some Philly talks today.
Yeah.
Ooh, nice. Before we start, do we have any follow-up?
Yeah. So,
Yeah,
you have the follow-up, though.
Yeah, I know. You do have some, too. So, I'll start. Most of my follow-up today is related to our episode 2. Yep. Yeah, follow-up 12 episodes later.
Funnily enough, today I was talking to someone who is listening to episode 4. So,
ooh.
It's still relevant, I guess.
No, it is. It is. And it's especially relevant to us Canadians. So, to remind our listener, episode 2 was, Yannick was analyzing, the mobile payment strategies and products from Japan and how it affects, the North American version of what we have right now. So, let's start with, our follow-up with a rumor from WSG, the Wall Street Journal. They say that Apple Pay plans to launch in Canada this fall. So, according to this rumor, Apple is in talks with 6 Canadian banks for mobile payment services, and the rumor's date is in November. So it's
Would be very interesting. It would probably launch near to the introduction of a new iPhone, I would imagine.
I would imagine too. November is around the corner, like just before Christmas. So the discussion are supposedly between Apple and 6 big banks in Canada. So the rumored names are Royal Bank of Canada, Toronto Dominion Bank, Bank of Nova Scotia, Bank of Montreal, the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce, and the National Bank of Canada. And the big splash with those names is it's all of the biggest banks in Canada, except Desjardins, which is not a bank, but
it's a credit union.
Yeah, it's a credit union. Because a nice quote that they have is they say from WSJ is like, together, those banks account for more than 90% of retail banks account in Canada. I'm like, yeah, obviously, since Desjardins is a credit union. But oh well. In my other follow-up, is for our American listeners, is Discovery announced that it will support Apple Pay beginning this fall. So, if I recall correctly, Discovery was the last credit card provider in the US that was not supporting Apple Pay. Because at launch, Apple had partnership with Visa, MasterCard, and a little bit later, American Express, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
So, Discovery support is coming this fall.
It's just Discover, not Discovery.
Oh, pardon me. Yeah, Discover. Now, our third follow-up is related to our good friend Best Buy. Best Buy recently was in the news in Canada because they decided to close all of their Future Shop stores, which was a Canadian brand. But the follow-up I have today is more related to their Apple Pay support in the U.S., and the big splash about Best Buy is it is still a big supporter of currency, which is still in development. And as Ben Thompson put it probably in a tweet, is like, yeah, we all knew that Best Buy will have to drop, not to drop, but will have to support Apple Pay at some point. Because if I recall correctly, they were part of the people that decided to disable Apple Pay last fall. Like they had the support, they could have all the infrastructure, but they decided to just disable it because of their currency implications. And lastly, today Home Depot announced that they are aiming to put Apple Pay in its 2,000 stores around the United States, and if they do so, they will be the biggest retailer in U.S. that will support Apple Pay. And this was reported by Bloomberg Business.
The thing that strikes me a little bit weird about that is when they say the biggest retailer to support Apple Pay, when you consider that any NFC terminal is compatible with Apple Pay, like there might be bigger chains that support Apple Pay but just aren't making specific deals regarding Apple Pay. I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah, it's a little bit strange. Like, they don't know what they mean by the biggest or largest retailer. Is the largest retailer by shops, by stores, or by amount of transaction, or by just dollar signs?
Well, I would imagine the biggest retailer in terms of, like, how many retail stores they have.
Yeah, I would think so, too. But it could be, like, a big retailer that does tons of, like, millions and millions of transactions each year, which will be a good way to properly test all the Apple Pay infrastructure.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, let's turn to your follow-up. If I recall correctly, it's Apple Watch follow-up.
Yeah, Apple Watch, a third-party app follow-up. So the first thing is that last week I complained a lot about the Line app being inadequate for my needs. Well, now I have to report that the Line app just doesn't launch on my Apple Watch anymore. So all of those complaints just went out because I can't use the app anymore, which is sort of a problem. Adding to that problem is that Line, as a privacy measure, in case someone tries to hijack your account, when you uninstall the app and try to reinstall it, well, it deletes all your history and conversation across all your devices, which is sort of a problem. So I'm not going to be uninstalling the entire Line app from my phone, but trying to uninstall the Watch app and reinstall it does not actually make it work again, which makes me hope that either other people are having this problem and that Line will be forced to fix it in an update if it's their fault. To be clear, it's the only app that's doing this for me right now. Every other app is working fine. Well, fine. It's working as intended. Whether or not that is fine is depends on what your expectations for the quality of Apple Watch apps are. So that's one thing. Second thing, last week I didn't have the opportunity to play around with Workflow on Apple Watch. Workflow is a great iOS automation app, and I had the chance to use it on Apple Watch, and I can say that I'm very disappointed with the initial offering. But I don't blame the developers for how it turned out, because it's such a challenging app to get to work on the Apple Watch. And a lot of things that would work just fine when you are building workflows on the phone don't work so well on the watch. For example, I was trying to make a workflow to schedule an appointment for our Limitless Possibility recordings, right? So I tried making a workflow that would make sense, and it would just give me errors and errors every time I would try to do stuff. And
which kind of error there were? Like communication error with the phone application?
No, it's just like things like I'm trying to do date input, right? So I wanted to do like all I wanted it to ask me is give me a date, and then I would automatically the workflow would create the appointment in my calendar in the right calendar with the right name and just do everything else for me. And the problem is I wanted to have it just say the date and everything else is done automatically, and something that would have worked in the iPhone app just was throwing errors in the Apple Watch version. And certain things that expect interactivity on the iPhone when you're doing an iPhone workflow, well, when you translate that into an Apple Watch workflow, it just freezes there and isn't too sure what to do, because it's like if they forgot to implement the Apple Watch portion of that action, you know? Like the UI for that action, it's trying to spawn it, but it doesn't exist or something.
Yeah, in a way, it's waiting for user input, but cannot show that user input on the watch part itself.
Right. So one example of this is I wanted to receive a notification when the workflow was complete. And if you put a send notification action in your workflow and then run that workflow on the Apple Watch, it just stalls on send notification. And it's like, I have no idea what to do now. Because I presume that the extension that you use when you're using workflow on the Apple Watch doesn't have privileges to, or doesn't have access to the API to send a notification. In that case, the thing should just not be available in the list of actions, I would imagine. But I guess it was forgotten. There were little oversights, but the problem is there are so many of those little oversights everywhere that it makes the entire experience very frustrating. The plus side is once you actually figure out some workarounds or stuff to actually get the stuff working, it's actually very, very useful, because then you can build really powerful stuff that can be activated with just a tap on the Apple Watch. And I'm looking forward to seeing how much more of that will be possible once they actually fix the issues that are in the app right now. And last but not least, I got an idea for an Apple Watch app, so I decided to go try to implement it. And without revealing what it is, I have a lot more sympathy for developers who have developed Watch apps, because WatchKit is very, very, very limited. Yesterday, Apple updated their website with the human interface guidelines for the Apple Watch, and earlier Marco tweeted that it's frustrating that so many things they show in the human interface guidelines aren't even possible with WatchKit. So it's sort of teasing us for when the native SDK is going to be coming out later this year.
So something I found really interesting in the user interface guideline is the way it was written. It felt to me that it was pretty concise. Like, it was straight to the point. And I was speaking with a colleague today, and my colleague was like, you know, there's not that much to do on the Apple Watch. And I was like, yeah, of course, but compared to all of the others' user interface guidelines, this one is pretty concise. Straight to the point, no blah blah, just like, you can do X. That's it.
Have you read the, I believe it's called the Android Design Guide, which is basically their human interface guidelines that they wrote like years after they should have written them, but basically when the design language for Ice Cream Sandwich was complete, they wrote this HIG, and the writing in the Apple Watch HIG, which I haven't completely finished reading, it reminded me a lot of the writing in the Android guide, which was really strange that an Apple document about design would remind me of Google document about design, but that was just something I noticed.
Yeah, funny times, I guess.
Yeah, so I am greatly looking forward to the native SDK so I can finally finish writing the app that I started.
Nice. Speaking of Apple Watch, if everything goes according to the plan, when that episode will be out, I should have my Apple Watch. Woohoo!
So we'll talk about it in another 2 weeks.
Yep.
But that'll give you some time to actually like have some opinions about it.
Indeed. And all of this is if UPS is like compliant and they ship the watch the date they say they would. So it should be tomorrow by noon, if I quote them.
Yay.
So that's pretty neat. And before we start on your subject, I have a small PSA, so a small announcement to do. Is something I forgot last episode is I won a ticket for WWDC. Woo! So yeah, I don't want to brag about it. I'm just like throwing out.
But you just did.
Yeah, I know. But I wanted to do a PSA about it because if there's any listener that are listening to us right now, and
all 12 of you,
indeed, and if any one of you will be in San Francisco during that week, feel free to ping me on Twitter and we can meet.
That's cool.
And now let's jump into your subject, Enig.
Yay. Okay, so I need a little bit of therapy now because the launch of my app is, well, not imminent, but it's very soon. I'm going to be submitting to the App Store tomorrow. And that has me thinking a lot about app marketing. It has me thinking about networking with other iOS developers in the community, and ultimately it has me thinking about what the hell I'm doing on my Twitter account, which is why this week's topic is about being yourself on social networks or not being yourself. We'll see. So I think this is very much a generational 20-somethings problem. We're sort of the first generation to have grown up and crossed into adulthood with social networks that we've been using already for years, which is kind of strange, and it's only going to get worse as kids keep being born. Our personal brands had already been developed by the time that we became adults and entered the working market, which is troubling. And foolishly, at least you and I, we used our real names, so anyone wanting to hire us can actually go look up our Twitter account and see all the nonsense we said when we were in high school. Which is also frightening.
Yeah. Now that we can do a full on like search history, or I don't remember the name of that Twitter feature, but the gist of it is you can just search the full history of a Twitter account now using the Twitter search API.
Which is either incredibly useful or incredibly terrifying.
Yeah, it's a magic mix of both.
Yeah. before we talk about Twitter specifically, I want to talk a little bit about Facebook, our good friends. Facebook, as you know, every relationship needs to be reciprocated. Well, more or less. I mean, there's the following thing, but nobody really uses that. It's where you add people. You have a societal obligation to add, more or less. It's people you went to school with. It's your family. Well, not if you're me, but if you're a normal person, it's your family and your friends. The problem is, like, Facebook is basically unusable for me these days. I feel like I'm a victim of Facebook's filters all the time. I have no confidence that anything I say will be seen by anyone, so that makes me less likely to post there. And I say that because I feel like I don't see any of my friends' posts either.
No, you're right. A good example of that is recently I started to follow like pages, whatever, related to motoring, sports shit, whatever it was. But like, I can tell you that like at least every 2 days I go see if there's updates on those pages. And the problem I have is I need to go see these pages because they rarely show up in my newsfeed.
Right. And recently Facebook tweaked their algorithm so that I believe stuff from pages features less prominently than friends' contents, because before it was the opposite. Stuff from your pages would feature more prominently than friends or something like that. The problem really, what I want from Facebook, and they will never give me this ever again, is what they used to have, which was a reverse chronological list of everything that my friends are posting. Everything, even the stuff that I don't like, because right now the algorithm is tuned for apparently stuff that I like, even though I hate most of the stuff I'm seeing on Facebook, ironically enough. And like their justification for what they're doing with the algorithm is, oh yeah, people say that they don't like it, but in reality our data shows that they like it anyway, which is the biggest bullshit I've ever heard. So I just don't like using Facebook. And it feels like it's being less popular anyway in our crowd.
It feels. But speaking of the old new newsfeed, is the first time they ditched the chronological order, remember that there was a kind of an hack, is you were able to put all of your friends in the list.
And yes, then did that.
You were able to get the most recent feature. My question is, do you know if that hack still works?
My understanding is it doesn't.
Ugh, okay.
Which pisses me off. I still have the list that contained all my friends. I just don't update it anymore because it's not worth it if it doesn't work.
No, and to go back to what you just said about the fact that it seems that there's a kind of trend of people just ditching Facebook, is like, I wouldn't say it's a trend, but it's you kind of have that feeling that people of our generation is kind of slowly but gradually going away from Facebook. Like, you need to be on Facebook because Facebook is the social network. You need to be on it, but you don't need to be active on
it. Well, it feels like you need to be on it only because there's a societal obligation to be on it, but once you're on it, nobody does anything anyway. And it feels that maybe Facebook as a whole isn't being left, but certainly like posts on the newsfeed are going down, and all of that energy is being concentrated into Messenger and maybe other services that aren't necessarily tied into main Facebook, like Instagram or, I would imagine, Snapchat, even though I don't understand Snapchat at all.
But I guess if they concentrate more on those features, it's where they see the most user retention or maybe user feedback. Like, they know that if they put so much work in those features, that's where they'll see the biggest improvements and biggest growth in their user base.
I'd imagine, except now I basically rarely check Facebook because there's like no reason to go there anymore.
Yeah, it's strange because I still have the habit of like, I come back from work and like, oh, let's sit at the computer and...
Oh, I totally have the muscle memory. I have the muscle memory of Command-T, F-A, enter. Like, I do that so many times a day, and then I'm like, this is the same thing I saw 6 hours ago. Like, why am I doing this? But the muscle memory is just there. It keeps happening.
Yeah, and sometimes it even works. It's like the same thing you saw a week ago.
Yeah, because they keep bumping things that your friends commented or liked recently, and it's weird.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay, so now that we're done bitching about Facebook, let's talk about the better social network for real people, Twitter. I'm sorry. Yeah. There are lots of issues with Twitter. I almost did an entire episode about it this week, but then I decided not to. So it feels easier to be yourself on Twitter. And the reason for this is that they talk a lot on Facebook about the social graph, right? Because you follow people you are presumably close to, although that is not really true. And you can basically like show Facebook your relationships with those people. And I would imagine that from an ad point of view, that isn't necessarily what you want. What you want is you want to know what users are interested in, because that is more relevant to advertising than who you're friends with necessarily. And that is where Twitter comes in, because Twitter, it's an asynchronous nature, which means you can follow who you want to follow, and you're likelier to follow people who talk about things you enjoy. Therefore, indirectly, Twitter knows what you enjoy.
I'm not so sure about that, to be honest.
Let me put a caveat on that.
Okay.
For geek circles who have been early adopters to Twitter, that is how a lot of us used it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I was thinking about the advertiser perspective. Like, the way that Facebook wants you to to put all of your information in its giant blob of server and all that stuff is, the main reason is because they want to know more about you, and they want to know your interests and what you like, what you dislike, obviously to better target ads to you. But at the same time, they kind of do a weird job, but they have the knowledge to do better targeting ads compared to Twitter, because
I'm doubtful of that. Okay, so let me point out what I actually post on Facebook. What I post on Facebook is high level life events, like I went on a trip, I had a birthday, I went to Boston and passed my JLPT. Like, those are the things that I post to Facebook. Otherwise, I mention absolutely nothing about my interests, because honestly, no one on Facebook gives a shit. They're all like people from high school who don't care about my interests. So why would I post about them on Facebook, right?
So, no, I get that. But the best example of that is just me. Like, I don't post that much. But from my job title, from my like school history, from my orientation status, they know that I'm a tech geek. That is K. So I have tech ads.
I can't imagine what those ads are.
So I have tech ads and dating site ads, which is kind of a weird mix, but that's what I have as ads, because they just focus on those points. And I'm sure the more that you put that, like, I love the last adventure movie, or I love the last Fast and Furious movie, I'm sure they're able to all use that data and crunch it and make better targeted ads.
And on a recent episode of Exponent, which is Ben Thompson's podcast, he actually makes the case for Facebook being possibly like the best placed advertising company on the web right now. So I don't mean to necessarily make this about advertising, because it doesn't even have anything to do with today's topic. But it was just like a side observation in my mind anyway. The interest graph is more important, even from an ad targeting point of view, than necessarily knowing who you have relationships with.
Yeah, but at the same time, we can say that you don't want to be yourself on social network because of advertisement.
Well, there's a point. I don't know about that. Well, yeah, okay, I get what you mean, but...
Yeah, I mean, you don't want those advertisers to know that much about you, so they give you less targeted ads.
Other possible scenario. So you mentioned that Facebook knows that you are a tech guy and you are gay. What if you're in the closet and then someone uses your computer and then they see those ads on another website? Like, right now for Facebook, that isn't a thing, because I don't think Facebook has ad units on non-Facebook sites, but it could give away some stuff about you. And even if like your privacy settings on your Facebook profile said, okay, my sexual orientation is private, since it assumes you're the one using the thing, it'll still show you that stuff, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
But like on Twitter, well, anyway, we'll see. So the strange thing about Twitter is exactly that asynchronous nature, and it's sort of bugging me now. the strange thing is that the people you follow and think of as quote-unquote Twitter may be completely different from the people who are actually following you. So, followers on Twitter can know you for one thing and expect you mostly to post about topic A, but primarily you post about topics B and C, and that is weird. And to give a concrete example, there's a lot more of me on the internet nerding out about Sunday morning kids shows in Japan than there is about anything indicating that I am an active iOS developer with an app coming out soon. And that is a major problem for trying to get people to care about my app.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
And honestly, if I met a developer that I respected very much, I would be very embarrassed to tell them to follow me on Twitter, because I know that they would last maybe 3 days and then unfollow me because it would just be anime screenshots all the time.
Oh my God.
And that is basically my problem and the reason that this episode even exists. So I'm going to give you some observations from my own Twitter usage.
Good.
I am following 143 people. I am followed by 925 people, which is a couple times more. My following count is intentionally low, and I keep trying to bring it down because I am insane and try to read every tweet that goes on my timeline. And the thing that bugs me the most is when I wake up in the morning and there are more than 1,000 tweets that I can't go back through. So that means I have to lose some people I'm following, which is sort of a problem. Again, Twitter... everything points that they don't want me to do that, but I don't care because I use Tweetbot and I'm a smart person. 75 out of 143 of these people are Japanese. So
that's surprising.
Yeah. Weekend mornings, Japan time, what I will do, and occasionally on live shift if I can't catch it live, I will be live watching anime and giving commentary on Twitter, either in English or Japanese, depending who is watching most. And this is something that I do with my group of friends in Japan who run a club event which concentrates on the music of kids' shows, right? Both nostalgic kids' shows and ongoing today's kids' shows. Another thing that I do on Twitter is react to music gaming news, because I have a music gaming news website, duh. But a lot of what I do is talking about music games, assuming everyone who follows me knows and follows the scene and understands what the hell I'm talking about. They don't. Very often, like starting at about 8 p.m., I will start tweeting in Japanese all night because that's when my friends in Japan are awake. And that is, I know even you have mentioned to me that that is sort of problematic.
It's not problematic. It's just funny. It's like, oh, Japanese. Because at that point, like, most of the people I follow are on the East Coast, so, like, there's less tweets during the night, except Yannick tweeting in Japanese.
Basically. And I feel like I tweet a lot relative to people in the Mac and iOS developer community, but I actually feel like I tweet very little compared to the people I follow who are from the anime community and from the music gaming community and all of that stuff, which is sort of a problem because you don't want people who are following you to be flooded with stuff that they're not expecting, especially when it's not a subject they care about. All of this is noise to people who don't care, and I'm not enough of a quote-unquote personality for people to stick around and put up with it. An example I can mention, of course, is John Gruber, who tweets a lot about Apple stuff, but when baseball season starts, he tweets a lot about baseball, but maybe not quite as much as I tweet about anime relative to iOS stuff. But you stick with John Gruber because he's John Gruber, whereas people are much more likely to unfollow me because I am a nobody relative to anyone in the community, more or less.
But now that you mention it, I don't remember the name of that. Oh, who did that? But I think it's Lex Freeman that created a baseball account for himself. Like, it's just including his tweet related to baseball during the baseball season.
Ben Thompson does that too. He calls it No Tech Ben on Twitter. And when he talks about the NBA, he does it there because nobody cares about basketball. Although I would say that of all the sports, basketball is one of the most respectable. And you know what hurts the most? Well, it doesn't hurt because it's sort of my fault, but it's really, really sucks when someone you really respect follows you, assuming they're going to hear about iOS development, and then they get bombarded with anime screenshots, and 2 days later they unfollow you. That really sucks. Yeah. And it's happened.
Yeah, I can understand why, too. Like, the best way to put it is, like, I don't care. Like, I just scroll by it. But I can see that for some people, that's a main reason to follow somebody. Because they want to follow people that have the same interest as them. And it might be a disappointment. Not in the person, but just in the fact that they wanted to have news or information about a certain topic. And they thought this person would give that. Give them right. that.
And at the same time, like, I'm not blaming this person for doing so, because if I was in their shoes, I would do the exact same thing. And I'm not taking it personally, because I know that, well, they probably didn't even know me personally at that time. But it's still kind of not fun, you know?
No, it is.
Especially when it's someone you really respect.
No, it isn't, indeed. And I guess at that point, like you just said, it will be hard to promote your, like, the Yannick brand, who's like who's the maintainer of a Japanese music game music website, and the other brand, which is the iOS dev that wants to promote his app.
Right. So right now my Twitter biography is iOS dev dash otogamer, which is music gamer in Japanese, and then DJ. Because those are sort of like the three camps I'm in, and I guess I should probably add something with regards to anime as well, because that's sort of another thing I'm in. But, like, those are the four camps I'm in, and I feel like I have to keep returning to that biography, because if I put anything else there, people forget I'm an iOS developer, which basically reveals how little I tweet about iOS stuff, mostly because I feel like other people are covering iOS well enough. I have nothing really to add on the subject, and if I want to add stuff, I'm more comfortable doing it in a podcast form than I am in 140 characters, because my thoughts are more meatier than 140 characters, you know what I mean?
No, I do, and I guess, like, I think it's something you might have touched in the past, but you know that some of your interests are in another language. So
yes.
Have you thought about creating a Yannick Japanese account?
I thought about it, but the problem is all my followers who follow me in Japanese are already following my account, and getting them to migrate to this other account would be trouble.
Yeah, and I'm sure the other part that you, if you were to convert this one to a Japanese account, and
is 900 people would be pissed off at me for suddenly only tweeting in Japanese instead of only doing it from 8 to 3 a.m.
Yeah, indeed.
And, like, there's no denying that recently I actually went through all my followers to try and block all the spam bots. I would have many more followers if it wasn't for me going through and blocking the ones that are visibly spam bots. And to be honest, there are a lot of people on Twitter who have patterns that are basically indistinguishable from spam bots to me, which is makes very hard to block the spam bots. What was I saying? I forgot what I was saying.
You were speaking about going through your list?
Yeah, before that. See, you forgot too.
Oh, man. Oh, okay, that's bad. Oh.
Anyway. But I was getting to, like, what's the solution to this problem? So with regards to my existing products, I've done some little segmenting. So I've always assumed that users of my products didn't necessarily care for me as a person. So I've given products their own Twitter accounts with an exception, and that exception is if they're a, quote, hobby app. And I'm going to make a little parallel to the Apple TV here. These are apps that I develop as a hobby, which are relevant to my personal interests and are less products that are mainstream, if I may say so myself. So Iconoclasm and EOS have their own accounts right now. And the app that I used to have, Mitsuba, which I shut down a month ago, and Telebitter, which is the app that I use to post anime screenshots, both of those don't have accounts because they're basically like my personal hobby apps that I develop for myself, basically. And people who have interests in line with mine are more likely to be interested in those apps, but people who aren't probably don't care, right? So it doesn't warrant giving them a whole extra account.
No, and I guess those smaller apps, you'll use the bigger branded app to promote them in a way, too.
I don't even promote them because they basically just exist for me.
Oh,
Okay. Except like Mitsuba, which doesn't exist anymore because I don't have the time to maintain it. and that's a whole other thing.
No, but what I was trying to say is at some point you want to like put your... maybe
you want to cross-promote?
Yeah, cross-promote, but maybe not cross-promote being an iOS developer with being a Japanese music fan.
Right. Well, so I intend to like retweet the EOS launch tweet on the Iconoclasm account so that the word gets out to those, like, I think it's about 500 followers on that account who are dedicated to that app, right? And of course, like, another advantage of having separate apps for these things is that when I decide, okay, I'm done working for the day, I don't have to see support requests for those apps, which is something that I find very important. Like, I want to segment those things. And it's very hard because, like, my apps on the App Store are attributed to me, and on Cydia as well, are attributed to my name, and they are not attributed to a separate entity. So people who are coming expecting to follow me and find out about my apps are finding out about the anime I like, and it's just not working out. And that's basically where I'm getting. It's tension of work-life balance on Twitter. And also, I'm sort of, I'm not going to say pessimist, but I don't like to promote the stuff that I do too much. Like, even this podcast, I don't talk about too much on my own personal account. And I'm trying to get better at that.
To be honest, it's pretty hard. I think I am in the same shoes as you for that. It's kind of hard to just push it down the throat of people. So we do, especially we do that podcast just for the fun of it. And we're pretty excited when we have a feedback from our listeners. But even if we have zero listener, I'm sure we'll continue speaking about everything we wanted to speak about.
Yeah. And like when you think about it, like the 900 something followers that I have, a lot of them followed me expecting that I would promote my stuff, to find out about my stuff, because that's presumably why they followed me in the first place, right? If they found out about me through Iconoclasm and they followed me, is that because they wanted to know more about my apps or about iOS development? I'm not sure, but there's a possibility that they're following me to find out what I'm up to. And I just basically never tweet about what I'm up to, which is sort of a problem.
I guess at that point, you might know that for your next project, for example, for EOS, it will be a really good and strong idea to just promote the EOS account, the EOS website. And yes, you can promote your own apps on your personal website, but if you want to have EOS information, EOS website and EOS Twitter account are the place to go.
Right. And that's sort of the strange thing is, like, when my apps launch, very often I will tweet one tweet about it, and that will be the last time I will mention it, aside from when I'm actively developing an update to that thing and I mention it in passing. But I don't hey, check out this new update. Maybe I do that like when I put up new updates on the store or something, but those are so infrequent that it's not really promotion for my app. It's just like, this is a thing that I did. But the problem is, like, not everyone is a Twitter completionist like me, so they never see that tweet. And so in Japan, something that's very, very common is you schedule auto tweets. And this is accepted. Like, people do this regularly, and I mute all of them mostly. I just select the whole tweet and mute it in Tweetbot because I don't really care. I've seen it once. I don't need to see it a billion times again. But again, that's the problem, is that people don't read every tweet on Twitter like me. And so they are more likely to miss stuff that I post about it. And so the approach I'm taking might not actually work if I'm trying to promote my stuff. But at the same time, I don't want to be shoving it down people's throats. And I'm just not sure what to do anymore.
I guess at that point, it's like you'll have to maybe cross-promote a little bit more. And in a way, when you want to promote something from your personal account, you don't want it to be just a simple retweet, for example. Like, something we can do when this episode gets released is like, on this episode, I really, really believe that Yannick and I had a great conversation, like, really different from the other subject that we have, because we touch feelings in really strong ones. And just, like, give something. And obviously, don't say that every episode is your best episode ever, because that's kind of lying. But I guess if you're able to bring something new to the table while promoting your new stuff, it could help your already growing audience. For example, like you could say in a app update that using this app, you just learned how whatever WatchKip worked, or how X technology helped you doing that update. And then you'll be able to bring something and not just simple retweet from that other account.
Yeah, I guess the other tension, right? So the thing I want to do is I want to increase the promotion of my stuff a little bit more. But at the same time, I don't want to piss off the existing friends that I have in the anime, music, gaming, blah, blah, blah communities by just suddenly... I don't want to invert the pyramid and then suddenly they only see Apple stuff on their timeline, because that is going to piss them off, right? But I think like having a greater balance maybe is more important, and maybe just like I've considered having a separate account just for anime live watching stuff, so that people who do not care about commentary for a live broadcast they can't watch because they're not in Japan anyway just don't see that stuff. And there are so few people who follow me who actually care about that stuff that I could probably convince them to follow that new account and it would be fine. But like at a certain point, I remember years ago, I was listening to the Security Now podcast with Leo Laporte and Steve Gibson. And Steve Gibson famously has like a different account for each topic. So he had like an account for security stuff. He had an account for tablet news. He had an account for basically trying to lengthen your life with healthy practices and stuff like that. Each of those were separate Twitter accounts. And I was like, this guy is insane. Why doesn't he just do one account and like be himself? And here I am trying to struggle with that very problem.
Yeah, but that sounds way more insane than the problem you have right now. Like, it seems so much more management than... it seems to me that this guy has to have its own Twitter management team just to make sure that...
Nah, it's just like if he wants to tweet about X subject, he'll switch to that account and do it there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. But maybe for me, it feels so much management to do that. It's like, what's the point at that point?
Right. And this is the other problem with multiple accounts, which I was getting to, is Twitter clients have a limit of how many accounts can be registered to them. And I don't want to be hogging 20 accounts on their thing. right now, I have 13 Twitter accounts. I'm not lying. That is how many are in my 1Password.
Oh, wow. I guess it's time for you to use the normal Twitter account, the Twitter app, and then
you're crazy. It's so bad.
Yeah, but you'll be able to use your 13 accounts in the same app. I guess if there's no number of accounts that you can have per app for the Twitter app, the Twitter official app.
But it's so bad. things I have considered up till now. Splitting out like a private account for friends and basically doing all that nerdy stuff there. The problem is, of course, I don't necessarily want to be limited to just my friends seeing all of the nerdy stuff that I'm doing. So then the option becomes, well, you create a separate account that's public, but then you have to manage routing the right people to the right account. And that is, again, another problem. I would probably, if I did that, I would feel more comfortable with leaving the current account as the nerdy one and then having the iOS app stuff go to a separate account, which is basically like my app business account, even though I don't have like a company name or something. The other account, go ahead.
I guess it might be the time to do that. Not to like start a full-on business, but I mean like to start a business brand.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I guess if you want to go to the next step while still staying in the dev, you'll need promotion. You'll need to promote your product if you want to go once a year to Japan to enjoy time with your friends and maybe at some point just whatever, like buy stuff, do stuff, and you know where I'm going with that. It's like, promotion will be the bread and the butter. Like, even if we us dev likes to think that development is the most important part, no, it's not, sadly. Like, you need to sell your shit if you want to continue working on it.
Okay, but then we have another problem, which is, do I want to continue having separate accounts for separate apps, or do I just do one account for all my apps?
I guess you started in a great trajectory. Like, having separate accounts for your main project. But I would see, like, having, like I just said, the business brand account that will say, like, oh, there's an update for that app. There's an update for that. There's an update for my small project, which, like, you know, it's like, oh, I created a new open source library for XYZ. And that will just be more the Yannick Magnan's business part of you. And obviously you'll have Twitter account for your apps, because I'm sure your users will like to know when is the next update. Maybe they'll ask you a question. I know Twitter is not the best platform to do support.
No, but it really pisses me off when people ask me support stuff on Twitter. I usually tell them email me, because I can't respond in a sensible way in 140 characters to support requests.
No, you're right. But sometimes if the answer is just on that web page that they are too lazy to find, or they don't know that it existed, you can just link them to them and that's it.
Yeah.
So maybe like using those kind of silos, but some of them are interconnected.
And then if I have like this apps business account, do I engage with other iOS developers there, or do I do it from my quote personal account where I have all the anime bullshit that they don't care about? See, that's sort of the problem. It's the problem isn't really like I'm probably not going to stop posting anime stuff, and I'm probably not going to stop posting music gaming stuff, because it's the stuff I like. But at the same time, I have to sort of compartmentalize my stuff in the right places, and I'm just not sure where the things should go necessarily.
No, you're right. A question I forgot to ask you is, do you have a Twitter account for your music website, like for Polyphonic Room?
Yes, it's at Polyphonic Room.
Okay, you
do. And most of the engagement we have with our users is via that. Nobody goes to the website, basically, unless we have a long form piece, which we link to the thing. But basically, it's like those RSS reposter things, except we don't have an RSS feed.
Okay, so it's just an auto repost account.
Not really. Well, we have like a script that posts links to both the site and the Twitter.
Yeah, that's what I meant by auto repost. It just posted the blog post to Twitter.
Yeah, but like we put more effort into the Twitter than into the website, because Twitter is where the people are. Basically, no one visits the website.
Okay. Then now I see what you meant. Like 5 minutes ago.
That Polyphonic Room is 6 people, right? So it doesn't feel right for me to be posting my own opinions on that account, because there are 6 of us, right? And one of the things that people actually enjoy about our website is we keep editorial to a minimum. We don't really give our opinions on stuff. We just translate the headlines that are coming out of Japan. So, and we link to the source. So it's very much like brief news that you can look at on Twitter. It was built for that purpose, basically.
Yeah, like a kind of a link blog on top of Twitter.
Yeah, it's basically a link blog about music gaming on Twitter. And if we have a long post, we just link to our own post.
Which rarely happens?
These days it rarely happens. It happened more when there were monthly events that were occurring, and we would have a monthly event post that would explain the content of that. But now it doesn't happen really, so.
Okay, I guess my other question is, right now, with your own personal account, do you think that you have the right balance between all of the subject that you like?
I think it reflects, well, the thing is, like, at a certain point, programming changed from being a hobby to turning into a job, right, for me?
Yeah, same for me too.
And now my account was always really about tweeting about my hobbies. So when programming got sort of phased out as a hobby and became more my job, then the other stuff started taking up most of my tweets. And that's basically what's being reflected in my personal account right now. So I say that if you look at my hobbies on Twitter, they're proportionally to how what they represent in my hobbies. But if you look at me as a whole, then of course my work is underrepresented because it's still like half the day.
Yeah, and I guess like it comes back to something that we said in a past episode about like all of the stuff we do to disconnect far from our job. And at some point, we just, like, even if we love programming, we just want to do something else for to disconnect for, like, a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be honest, it's a good problem that you have, in a way. It's, like, a hard problem, but it's something that I haven't considered. Like, I just touch a bit is part of the problem you have is you need to do all of your promotion, like, I go to work and somebody's paid to do the promotion of our product.
Yeah, you have a marketing department.
Exactly.
I only have myself.
Yeah, you have yourself. And the work and the energy you put into that will greatly, like, even if you put tons of energy and money, it doesn't mean, like, instant success too. But what I'm trying to say here is...
But it makes it more likely.
Yeah, indeed. But it makes all of that burden on your shoulders.
Yeah. And people often talk about, like, everybody knows what a Coke is. They don't need to be spending, like, this many billion dollars in marketing every year. And, yeah, the reason that everybody knows what a Coke is because they spend that $1 billion on advertising every year.
Yeah, it's repetition.
Yeah.
The same way that Squarespace sponsoring all of the podcasts.
Oh, that drives me nuts.
I know. That's why I use that example. But you know right now that if you want to build a website, you need to go on Squarespace.
We are not sponsored by Squarespace. We are the only podcast on the internet that is not sponsored by Squarespace right now.
Yeah, but okay, maybe it was a bad example considering it. You're tired of listening to Squarespace ads, but like maybe that's something that you need to start to do and you need to feel more comfortable doing it. And in a way, it's hard to do. Like, you need to jump into it, and I guess it's the same way we decided, like, 14 episodes ago to jump into podcasting, and here, 14 episodes later, we're kind of okay. I guess we're better than the first episode, but you just need to try it.
Yeah.
So I guess I will end by saying that maybe try to what's the best way to put it? Maybe try to start building your business branding, like your personal brand or something. Like
hashtag brand.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the biggest point I made is that brand is your shit. Like everybody in the iOS community knows Marco because of his personal brand. The same thing for underscore David Smith. And everybody knows underscore because of is personal branding. And I'm sure those people have other hobbies too. And they speak about it on Twitter too.
Yeah, but like I feel like in comparison, it's such a small proportion.
Yeah, but don't forget that you're still like in development. And in a way, you kind of want, you don't want to be too cautious about it, but at the same time, you want to have your big splash. So maybe that's the problem you have right now. You've been working on EOS for a while, and yes, we spoke about it on this podcast a lot, but even then we're still pretty vague about it because you want to keep your surprise effect during your launch time.
Yeah, but that's also the problem is I feel like I don't know if you follow Will French.
I don't think so. I'm not sure.
Well, you maybe don't know if you follow Will French because he tweets so little. And I feel like I tweet about as often about development as he tweets, period. And everything in between that is anime and music games. And that is sort of a problem for me because I'm not Will French. People know who Will French is. Well, in the iOS and Mac development community, people know who Will French is because he's Will French. But like nobody knows who I am. And then they go to my account and they see all his anime stuff. And then they're like, oh, well, where does he talk about development? ? And then they never find it because it's buried like 3 months ago. I mentioned my app somewhere.
If I think a little bit outside of us, have you thought about moving your iOS stuff away from Twitter and be more like, I have my development blog that I speak about the issue I ran into while working on my apps.
The thing is, like, I don't actually have any stories to share. That's like the problem. I do have some stories to share, but they're very few, and talking about them during development is not interesting to me. It would be after development, but it would be, there would be so few that it wouldn't be worth following. Like, that's the problem. And like, people follow like bloggers, like to an extent, Marco and Casey and John, well, not John Gruber, he's not actually a developer, but like, these people blog more or less every day, and it's almost like a part-time job for them. Not Casey, but like Marco definitely is, like, it's part of his income because he has such big readership.
But at the same time, like, even I assume that you don't make that much money with Polyphonic Room, but
I don't make any money on,
yeah, but even then, Room. Like, the amount of work you told me it takes to do is kind of intense. Like, it is a part-time job for you too, but it's not community.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, I can't monetize Polyphonic Room because the community has been so seated in piracy for so long that there is no way to get anyone in that community to pay for basically anything. So it's like, it's not worth it. The only way I could do it would be with ads, but since most of our users are just seeing us through Twitter anyway, like, I'm not going to be selling ad tweets in my timeline. That's basically just spam. So there's like no way to monetize that into anything worthwhile. Unless we like spin out into video content or something like that on YouTube or Twitch or something like that. But like, there's no way for me to make money on Polyphonic Room in a sensible way.
Or maybe it's just that you don't want to, you don't want to use non-sensible way to monetize it. If you see what I mean.
Well, yeah, no, I don't want a nonsensible way to monetize anything I do, and that's sort of the problem, right? Is there are lots of ways that are much more likely to make me money, but if they're not something that I find morally acceptable, I'm not going to do them. And this is something I was talking about recently. Like, I'm not going to flood the App Store with a bunch of, like, cookie-cutter apps and, like, try to make my money that way. I want to have, like, everything I put on the store, I want to be proud of it. And that's some developers, I see what they put out, and I don't think that's really the case.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, to play devil's advocate here is, by doing so, you have more experience to speak about, to share about, and then you're able to promote your personal brand a little more every time you speak about those experiences.
Yeah, but I feel like people can see through the bullshit.
I guess if you do those, kinds of projects only for that, yes. But if you're able on all of those small projects to find a value for yourself, I guess it will remove that bullshit factor.
Like, I'm going to be like honest about what my plans for the rest of the year are. I'm going to be focusing on smaller apps, but like only like, I feel like this is dumb because I'm going to say like only like 4 apps, which sounds like nothing, but it's because there are developers who put out like literally dozens of apps, which is just maddening. I have smaller apps and scopes. EOS is basically like the last big app I have. Well, I don't have ideas for big apps left. But it's basically like it's taken up a year of my time, and it honestly shouldn't have taken a year of my time, but I did a lot of new stuff. But from here on out, I want to do smaller apps that are more focused, have a more diverse portfolio, because the thing is, like, Iconoclasm is going away very quickly. Like, the income I'm making every month is significantly lower than the last. And that is worrisome because it's 100% of the money I make.
Yeah, so, indeed. And it's another subject I'm sure at some point we want to touch on.
Well, it's sort of related, so I'm going to go into it right now, if you don't mind.
No problem. I was just referring to, I was about to say, like, the other subject we want to touch about is the jailbreak community.
Yeah, which is future episode, of course.
Yeah.
But, like, what I want to do the rest of the year is I have basically 4 ideas for utility apps that I want to make. I'm going to make them as good as I can within a certain time period. I'm going to be time boxing myself to try and get as many, well, not as many apps out before the end of the year, because that sounds like I'm trying to crank them out like really, really fast. But these apps are smaller in scope, but I want a more diverse portfolio so that if EOS flops, I have something else, hopefully, that is going to keep me afloat. And honestly, it's entirely possible that all of them flop and I'm going to have to get a boring job.
Don't say it this way. Come on.
Well, you know, I'd rather be the boss of myself and write apps that I am actually passionate about instead of winding up at a company developing apps that I don't really care about. And
yeah, but what I'm saying here is you can work for somebody else while still being passionate about it.
Well, that's the other issue, right? So when we came out of college, like if I was trying to look for an actual job, there are not really that many places outside in the tech community where I would actually feel the products that I would work on would be something I would actually be passionate about. And that's sort of the problem, right? Is I'm so focused in like what I care about that there are so few places where I would actually want to work. And that's a problem, because if you get knocked out at all those places, then you basically don't have a job.
Yeah, and at that point, that's where you make choices. Like,
yeah,
you accept a lower income, and then you're an indie dev.
Honestly, basically any job would be better income than what I'm making right now.
Obviously, but the trade-off is you're your own boss, you do whatever you want, and that's fine.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's, I guess, the main solution to your like social network problem is it's just you need to make the right compromises. And yeah, the problem is
what the hell are those compromises?
Exactly. But like, not to be philosophical here, but life is a series of compromises. But it's true.
God.
Even if it's cheesy to say it that way. But like,
someone should tell that to the Windows 8 team.
Yeah, especially if you don't want your life to be like Windows 8.
Oh, God.
Exactly.
So we basically haven't reached a conclusion at all, but that's more or less everything I have to say.
I guess it will be on yet another episode. It's like, can we find something positive to say to end this episode? And you'd say, no.
No, definitely not. Well, actually, yes, I do have something positive to say. Hey, I'm submitting my app to the App Store tomorrow, probably, so yay.
Good. Yeah, that's
please
nice.
Go follow EOS_app on Twitter.
Yay! So make sure that you put a link to this Twitter account in the show notes, and maybe to the freshly done website.
It's not going to be up by the time this airs.
Ah, crap!
But well, I can link to the stupid teaser page.
Ah, you can.
Yeah. So if you want to join me on Twitter, where you can follow me and see all of my stupid anime screenshots, you can follow me at Sakurina on Twitter. That's S-A-K-U-R-I-N-A.
You can follow me on Twitter at Lukonush, L-U-C-C-O-N-U-C-H-E. And by the way, I don't speak about anime and Japanese music.
And you're fairly low volume, so people should follow you anyway. You can follow the podcast itself, where occasionally I will tweet a random comment, maybe. And we also post our show release announcements there at limipo_podcast. That's at LIMIPO_podcast.
You can find the show notes at limitlesspossibility.net/14. And obviously you can find the podcast website at limitlesspossibility.net.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.